This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Verbally Abusive Relationship, How to Recognize It and How to Respond by Patricia Evans. Read by Annette Romano. Foreword. Since the first edition of this book was published in 1992, the landscape of verbal abuse has changed. Since that time, I, with the help of many people, have done what I could to spread the word that there is such a thing as a verbally abusive relationship. Oprah dedicated a whole show to this subject, even titling it The Verbally Abusive Relationship. Many other TV and radio hosts have also contributed to this effort by giving me time and space to spread the word. Organizations of all kinds have invited me to speak. I've done so not only in the United States, but also in Canada, Australia, and Spain, where the Spanish government's newly formed Commission for the Investigation of Violence Against Women heard me speak in simultaneous translation. In addition, earlier editions of this book have been printed in many languages, including French, German, Spanish, Russian, Polish, Yugoslavian, and Chinese. Readers just like you are talking. My readers have done a tremendous job spreading the word about this topic. In the years since the first edition of this book, which introduced the term verbally abusive relationship to the world, many thousands of women have contacted me by phone, email, or letter. Usually, callers have a quick question, or they want to arrange a private consultation for information and referrals. But they've also told me of the verbal abuse they've suffered in their relationships. They've wanted clarity. Thousands have told me, "I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what. Now I have a name for what I've suffered." The culture is changing. Verbally abusive relationships are recognized as real. In all of my books, I've attempted to answer the questions people ask me. Why do I feel so badly? What is happening in my relationship? In this book, The Verbally Abusive Relationship, they find a name for what they suffer. Is there more to know? Are there other controlling behaviors in my relationship? In Verbal Abuse Survivors Speak Out, I explain the other forms of control. What's wrong with people who are verbally abusive? Why was he so nice and then so mean? In Controlling People, I offer insight and advice to answer these questions. What would it take for a verbally abusive person to change? Can verbally abusive men stop their abusive behavior? In The Verbally Abusive Man, Can He Change? Readers can take the steps I suggest to request change, and most importantly, wake up the abuser if they wish. They can best make this effort, if they so desire, if they are grounded in the knowledge they've gained in the first three books. It's not just women who suffer from verbal abuse. I hear from men, too. When a man contacts me who feels he is going crazy from his partner's verbal abuse, I tell him that if, over the years, he has heard verbal abuse from a woman again and again, I don't know if she can change. I haven't seen a verbally abusive woman change. That is, one who constantly criticizes, accuses, or rages at him. However, he too can follow the steps I outline to request change. In the last 10 years, several dozen men, at most, who were experiencing verbal abuse in their relationships have contacted me. Their partners did not seek help. Verbally abusive women are those who constantly accuse and criticize their mates, and some rage at them. These women are not suddenly angrily responding to years of verbal abuse while in the process of ending the relationship. Instead, they've been abusive over a number of years. Verbally abusive women often have psychological disorders. I have not known these abusive women to seek help, even when they face divorce. Some, as if they were victims, even initiate divorce. They seem to believe their accusations. In other words, their accusations are automatic explanations, confabulations, that their mind forms that explain to them why they feel attacked by their spouse's personhood, his success, or even his happiness. Similarly, men who abuse their wives also form confabulations as to why they feel attacked by her personhood. Husbands of verbally abusive women seem, from this small sample, to experience verbally abusive relationships just as women do. They try to please their partners. They try to give them everything they can. They try to explain themselves and to defend themselves just as if their partners were behaving rationally. One difference I have noticed is that men are slower than women to reveal the details of what they hear and experience. This tendency could be because men are not used to being victims of women. Women more commonly are victims of men. Whole countries have persecuted women or otherwise fostered inequality and oppression. Even in the United States, women do not receive pay equal to men's for equal work. Women know that many women have been victimized in the world. Though men may be victimized in relationships, they are not victimized by society, unless they are discriminated against because of their race or preferences. Another important reason that men are slow to reveal details of their abuse may be that they have been taught to be protective of their partner or to take it. I believe that verbally abusive women have not sought help because they are much more damaged than the average verbally abusive male. They have lost, to some degree, all that is ascribed to the feminine, their warmth, receptivity, and nurturing qualities, as well as their emotional intelligence. And they have also lost their masculine side, the confidence, self-esteem, and action orientation encouraged in males. In contrast, usually the verbally abusive man has lost qualities ascribed to the feminine, but still retains those qualities of action and determination encouraged in male culture. In other words, he may be conforming to a culture that views the feminine as lesser, and so has suppressed those universal human qualities that have been erroneously ascribed to the feminine only. Can couples counseling really help? Thousands of verbally abused women seek support from the mental health community, but they rarely find it in couples counseling. Many find support on the www.verbalabuse.com bulletin board, where more than 6,000 women have registered. There are, however, therapists who definitely recognize verbal abuse since they have read my books and often refer them to patients. When they hear one partner say something like, "She blows things out of proportion," they immediately separate the couple to begin one-on-one counseling. Unfortunately, many couples counselors have been trained to see any problem in a relationship as belonging equally to both persons. Thousands of women have tried couples counseling and reported to me that it made them feel crazy for this reason. Some have even seen the counselor witness the verbal abuse and do nothing to stop it. Mary sent me the names of all the therapists of every type she had seen, from ministers to doctors to family therapists to social workers. Her husband Bob also signed the letter. They both said, "No one identified the problem, and we have spent around $30,000 in the past 25 years. Sarah told me that she and her spouse had spent $100,000 in therapy over the years, hoping to know what was wrong and how to improve their relationship. The Rise of Dating Violence. Since the first edition of The Verbally Abusive Relationship was published, dating violence has only accelerated. I recently made a presentation on teen dating violence at the annual conference of the National Foundation for Women Legislators. Family members of murdered girls spoke out, appealing to legislators to continue to enact policies that encourage schools to teach children about abuse and how to recognize controlling behaviors. Since verbal abuse precedes domestic violence in relationships, I believe no teens of average or better reading ability should pass through their 16th year without having read this book. One in three adolescent girls in the United States is the victim of abuse. Girls 16 to 19 experience the second highest rate of non-fatal intimate partner violence. Only girls aged 20 to 24 who are at the greatest risk exceed this group. One in five tweens, age 11 to 14, say that their friends who date have experienced dating violence. And of those who are in relationships, they say half have experienced verbal abuse. For more information on teen dating violence, visit www.endabuse.org. The good news. Some progress has been made since 1992, when the first edition of this book was published. A few states have set policy to teach children about abusive relationships. Verbally abusive relationships are now recognized and referred to as such in various media. Men's attitudes towards the concept of verbal abuse are changing. In the last several years, I have heard from increasing numbers of men at risk of losing their relationships who want to know how they can change. They realize that they have defined their partners in many of the ways this book describes. I have also heard from men who want to change even though they do not expect to get their partners back. Their partners have moved on to new relationships, but they realize that they need help to become the men they thought they were. That is, non-abusive. One man, Mac, went so far as to set up a support group in the form of an online bulletin board for men who are seeking support in changing their behavior. He created the forum, Men Ending Verbal Abuse and Control, for men seriously trying to change. Visit http://mevac.proboards.com to learn more. Finding out that you are a verbal abuser and controller is a bit like falling down the rabbit hole, says Mac. Your entire reality is shaken to the core. To find out that your relationships are broken, that those around you are frightened by you, that something is horribly wrong with you and the way you view and communicate with the world is a very scary and life-changing event. We will help you. Once you have accepted the truth and begin to walk down the right road to reforming yourself, you will begin to find out that real relationships based on trust, respect, and love are so much more rewarding. These men want to stay conscious. They want to stop their irrational behavior, such as making statements that attempt to define their partner's inner world for them. That is, characterizing their partner's motives, needs, feelings, and even very natures in their own terms. For example, you're trying to start a fight. Motive. You just want to be right. Want. You don't feel that way. Feeling. You're too sensitive. Nature. Abusers make these statements as if they were gods, as if they lived within their partner's body, mind, soul, and actually knew these things to be true. But more and more men are realizing that these comments represent irrational behavior and are working towards ending this behavior, both in themselves and in other men as well. One such man is planning to establish a Verbal Abusers Anonymous program based on the 12-step model. It may take time, but no doubt it will happen. Another positive outcome. Some men who've read Controlling People call for help. We've come a long way, but technically, we have come a long way. I've established a new site, www.verbalabuse.com, with a new video interview, a free 6,000-plus member bulletin board, and a free email newsletter with more than 7,000 subscribers. Women and men are taking a stand against verbal abuse. And while we may have come a long way, we still have a long way to go. My hope is that this expanded third edition of The Verbally Abusive Relationship will play a critical role in making further strides in the support of victims, the education of abusers, and the raising of awareness across all levels of society. Note, since I hear primarily from women, I will continue to use the feminine pronoun when describing the target of verbal abuse. This doesn't mean that women don't abuse men, but that I have very few details from them. If you are a male and you've tried and tried to make your relationship work and to explain yourself to your partner and you identify with the partners, please change the she's to he's and the he's to she's. I also used composites and pseudonyms to protect the privacy of people who shared their stories with me. Introduction. This book is for everyone. It happens that the examples, experiences, and stories it contains were told to me by women. Consequently, and hopefully without prejudice, I refer to the feminine experience of the confusion and pain of verbal abuse. In order to protect the confidentiality of the women who shared their experiences with me, I have changed their names and the identifying circumstances. The women I describe are composites. They are the partners or former partners of verbal abusers. Verbal abuse is a kind of battering which doesn't leave evidence comparable to the bruises of physical battering. It can be just as painful, and recovery can take much longer. The victim of abuse lives in a gradually more confusing realm. In public, she is with one man. In private, he may become another. Subtle diminishing or angry outbursts, cool indifference, or one-upmanship, witty sarcasm or silent withholding, manipulative coercion, or unreasonable demands are common occurrences. They are, however, cloaked in a "what's wrong with you, making a big deal out of nothing" attitude, and many, many other forms of denial. Often, for the verbally abused woman, there is no other witness to her reality, and no one who can understand her experience. Friends and family may see the abuser as a really nice guy, and certainly he sees himself as one. Although this book describes women's experiences, it is a fact that some men suffer verbal abuse from their mates. Generally, however, they do not live in the kind of fear women experience with an angry man. If you have been verbally abused, you have been told in subtle and not so subtle ways that your perception of reality is wrong and that your feelings are wrong. Consequently, you may doubt your own experience and at the same time not realize that you are doing so. I suggest that as you hear about the experience of verbal abuse, you notice if this kind of experience seems familiar to you. This book is designed to enable you to recognize subtle verbal abuse and manipulation. My intention is to reveal the nuances and reality of verbal abuse as experienced by the partners of the verbal abusers. All would be pleased to forget the past, never recalling the painful events which led to the writing of a book such as this. We would all like to forget the problems of our collective past. We can, however, learn from the past and through informed awareness make conscious choices that ensure a better future. Any one person's disparagement diminishes us all. The verbally abusive relationship is based upon my interviews with 40 verbally abused women. Their ages ranged from 21 to 66. The average length of their relationship was a little over 16 years. Collectively, therefore, I have drawn upon more than 640 years of experience with verbal abuse. Most of the women I interviewed had left a verbally abusive relationship. Recognition and integration of what had occurred was still going on, 5, 10, and 15 years later. Many had tried every avenue, every approach to improve their relationship, explaining, overlooking, asking, begging, individual and joint counseling, living their lives as independently as possible, meeting their own needs, not asking too much, settling for less and less, being undemanding, being understanding. Nothing seemed to work. The dynamics of the relationship were often still a mystery. If, after reading this book, you suspect that you are in a verbally abusive relationship, I hope that you will seek professional counseling and will bring this book with you. You will need support and the validation of your reality. There are possibilities for a happy relationship if both parties are willing to change. A very important word of caution. If you have been the victim of verbal abuse, if you have searched your soul for answers to the questions of how you can say things so he will understand, how it is that you hear what he says he never said, or how it is you feel what he says you shouldn't feel, you may have been led to believe that there is something basically wrong with your ability to communicate or with your perceptions or feelings. You may now be asking, how can I change my basic nature? After all, didn't I just read, there are possibilities for a happy relationship if both parties are willing to change? Don't despair. I do not suggest that in order to determine if you can have a happy relationship with your mate, you change your nature. Instead, I suggest that when you recognize what you are encountering, you respond to what you are recognizing in a specific way, a way that requests change. By doing so, you may encounter your fear of loss of love. By not doing so, you may encounter your fear of loss of self. The underlying premise of this book is that verbal abuse is an issue of control, a means of holding power over another. This abuse may be overt or covert, constant, controlling, and what Bach and Deutsch, 1980, call crazy-making. The effects of verbal abuse are primarily qualitative, that is, they cannot be seen like the effects of physical abuse. There are no physical signs of injury, no bruises, black eyes, or broken bones. The intensity of anguish which the victim suffers determines the extent of the injury. The quality of the experience of the victim defines the degree of abuse. My primary purpose is to enable you, the listener, to recognize verbal abuse. Since verbal abuse is experiential in nature, this book, as a whole, is about experience. Significant facts that add perspective to the material in this book are these. 1. Generally, in a verbally abusive relationship, the abuser denies the abuse. 2. Verbal abuse most often takes place behind closed doors. 3. Physical abuse is always preceded by verbal abuse. The book is divided into two parts. Part 1 begins with a self-evaluative questionnaire. Then, from a broad perspective, it describes power over as a kind of power manifested by dominance and control, in contrast to personal power, which is manifested by mutuality and co-creation. Next, the experience, feelings, and thinking of the partner of the verbal abuser are explored. Finally, the primary patterns of abuse are described. Part 2 defines the categories of verbal abuse, such as withholding, countering, discounting, and trivializing, and describes the cultural context in which the partner evaluates her experience. Appropriate methods of communicating and seeking change are explained. We then explore the underlying dynamics of the verbally abusive relationship, therapy, and children and verbal abuse. The final chapter discusses the underlying dynamics of the verbally abusive relationship. Part 1. Part 1 begins with an evaluation and checklist to help the reader discover unrecognized episodes of verbal abuse. Two kinds of power are described and contrasted: power over and personal power. Then, in the context of these two kinds of power, abusive and non-abusive relationships are compared. We will then explore some of the partner's experiences and discover how the verbal abuser and the partner seem to be in different realities and unable to recognize each other's worlds. We will learn how verbal abuse affects the partner, how she thinks and feels, and what she believes. The confusion generated by both cultural conditioning and verbal abuse is discussed. Finally, patterns of abuse are described, as well as the actual dreams, physical symptoms, and inner images that alerted some partners to the fact that their relationships were, in truth, not all that they had seemed to be. Chapter 1. Evaluating Your Own Experience. Yelling at living things does tend to kill the spirit in them. Sticks and stones may break our bones, but words will break our hearts. Robert Fulghum. Most of us are aware that name-calling is verbally abusive. If you have been called idiot, dummy, bitch, or any other derogatory name, you have been verbally abused. Name-calling is the most obvious form of verbal abuse and is not difficult to recognize. Other forms of verbal abuse are less evident. Recognizing these forms of abuse in adult couple relationships can be very difficult for many reasons. Some primary reasons follow. 1. Verbal abuse is secretive. Usually, only the partner of the abuser hears it. 2. Verbal abuse becomes more intense over time. The partner becomes used to and adapted to it. 3. Verbal abuse takes many forms and disguises. 4. Verbal abuse consistently discounts the partner's perception of the abuse. Verbal abuse is, in a sense, built into our culture. One-upmanship, defeating, putting down, topping, countering, manipulating, criticizing, hard selling, and intimidating are accepted as fair games by many. When these power plays are enacted in a relationship and denied by the perpetrator, confusion results. The following evaluation is designed to help you determine if you are experiencing verbal abuse in a relationship. Think about which statements are true for your relationship. 1. He seems irritated or angry with you several times a week or more, although you hadn't meant to upset him. You are surprised each time. He says he's not mad when you ask him what he's mad about, or he tells you in some way that it's your fault. 2. When you feel hurt and try to discuss your upset feelings with him, you don't feel as if the issue has been fully resolved, so you don't feel happy and relieved. Nor do you have a feeling that you've kissed and made up. He says you're just trying to start an argument, or in some other way expresses his refusal to discuss the situation. 3. You frequently feel perplexed and frustrated by his responses because you can't get him to understand your intentions. 4. You are upset not so much about concrete issues, how much time to spend with each other, where to go on vacation, etc., as about the communication in the relationship, what he thinks you said, and what you heard him say. 5. You sometimes wonder, what's wrong with me? I shouldn't feel so bad. 6. He rarely, if ever, seems to want to share his thoughts or plans with you. 7. He seems to take the opposite view from you on almost everything you mention, and his view is not qualified by I think, or I believe, or I feel, as if your view were wrong and his were right. 8. You sometimes wonder if he perceives you as a separate person. 9. You can't recall saying to him, cut it out or stop it. 10. He is either angry or has no idea of what you're talking about when you try to discuss an issue with him. If you have agreed with two or more of these statements, this book will support you in recognizing verbal abuse. If you have not had these experiences, this book will support your empathetic understanding of those who have. If you think you've had some of these experiences but aren't sure, read on. Verbal abuse may be overt, such as an angry outburst directed at the partner, or an attack along the lines of, you're too sensitive. Or it may be covert, hidden, as in the case of, I don't know what you're talking about, when in fact the abuser does know. Covert verbal abuse is subversive because of its indirect quality. It is a covert attack or coercion. This kind of abuse has been described as crazy making. It is a form of interpersonal interaction that results from the repression of intense aggression and which seriously impairs its victim's capacity to recognize and deal with the interpersonal reality. Bach and Goldberg, 1974. When this kind of abuse occurs, the partner has nothing specific to deal with. She must trust her own experience, and as painful as it is, come to terms with the knowledge that the abuser is not loving, valuing, and respecting her. George R. Bach and Ronald M. Deutsch, in their book Stop, You're Driving Me Crazy, 1980, state, of value in teaching recognition of the crazy-making experience is the following checklist. 1. Feeling temporarily thrown off balance and momentarily unable to right oneself. 2. Feeling lost, not knowing where to turn, searching aimlessly. 3. Being caught off guard. 4. Feeling disconnected, confused, disoriented. 5. Feeling off balance as if the rug had been pulled from under one's feet. 6. Receiving double messages, but somehow unable or fearful to ask for clarification. Author's note, or asking for clarification, but not getting it. 7. Feeling generally bugged by the simple presence of a person. 8. To discover that one was mistaken in one's evaluation of where one stood or what it was all about. 9. Feeling totally unprepared for a broken promise or unfulfilled expectation. 10. Experiencing the shattering of an important dream. 11. Where one assumed goodwill, ill will seems to prevail. 12. One feels pushed around, not in control of one's own direction. 13. Unable to get off redundantly spinning circles of thoughts. 14. What seems clear becomes muddled. 15. An uneasy, weird feeling of emptiness. 16. A strong wish to get away, yet feeling unable to move, as if frozen. 17. One is befuddled, not able to attack the problem. 18. Feeling vaguely suspicious that something is wrong. 19. Feeling that one's subjective world has become chaotic. You may recognize some of the feelings and experiences described above. Others may not be clear to you. Some partners of verbal abusers recognize, after being away from the relationship for a while, that they used to feel that way. Verbal abuse is hostile aggression. The abuser is not provoked by his mate. The abuser may consciously or even unconsciously deny what he is doing. In any case, he is not likely to wake up one day and say, "Oh my, look what I've been doing. I'm really sorry. I won't do it anymore." No one but the partner experiences it. Usually, only the partner can recognize it. The aggression can be recognized because the impact of the behavior on the victim is a hurtful one. Bach and Goldberg, 1974. Generally, the responsibility for recognizing verbal abuse rests with the partner of the abuser, because the abuser is not motivated to change. However, the partner may have difficulty recognizing the abuse for what it is, because she is led to doubt her feelings. For example, if she feels hurt or upset by something her mate has said, and she expresses her feelings, saying, "I felt bad when you said that," the verbal abuser, instead of recognizing her feeling and responding appropriately, will reject and invalidate her feeling by saying something like, "I don't know what you're talking about. You're too sensitive." The partner then doubts her own perception. Why? In childhood, like many, she may have been taught that her feelings were to be ignored. Feelings, however, are essential to our being, because they are the criteria by which we determine if something is wrong or unsafe. When the partner can recognize and validate her feelings, she can begin to recognize verbal abuse. In other words, she might say, "I feel hurt. I am being hurt. I feel diminished. I am being diminished. I feel unrecognized. I am being unrecognized. I feel ignored. I am being ignored. I feel made fun of. I am being made fun of. I feel discounted. I am being discounted. I feel closed off. I am being closed off." You may fill in the next one, and so on. I feel. I am being. If the partner shares her feelings with the perpetrator of the aggression, you can be absolutely certain he will invalidate them. He may, for example, deride her with a sarcastic comment, and then, when she protests, tell her it was a joke. The partner may then doubt the truth of her own perceptions. However, the very impression of truth is likely to be perceived not from another's vision, but from one's own. Bach and Deutsch, 1980. Chapter 2. Two Kinds of Power, A Broad Perspective. The world without spirit is a wasteland. Joseph Campbell. There are two kinds of power. One kills the spirit. The other nourishes the spirit. The first is power over. The other is personal power. Power over shows up as control and dominance. Personal power shows up as mutuality and co-creation. Mutuality is a way of being with another person which promotes the growth and well-being of oneself and the other person by means of clear communication and empathetic understanding. Co-creation is a consciously shared participation in life, which helps one reach one's goals. These ideas will be discussed more fully in chapters 3 and 4. Since verbal abuse is symptomatic of personal, cultural, and global problems which originate with the misuse of power, I shall begin with a broad perspective and a comprehensive look at power over. Power over is one model of how the world is believed to work. A belief in power over resembles a lens through which the believer views the world. Someone who believes in power over expects to get what he or she wants through the use of power over another. Our Western civilization was founded on power over. Now, as a civilization, we have tremendous power over the earth and its peoples and resources. We have the power to wipe out our world. We have the power of total destruction. The power over model is, I believe, no longer tenable. Some of the symptoms of living and acting through this paradigm are pollution, potential global annihilation, hunger and homelessness, prejudice and tyranny. These concerns bring into sharp focus our regard for human dignity and the quality of life. The power over paradigm holds power over life. Power over life may deny the value and quality of life. The power over model of control and dominance has permeated individual consciousness for thousands of years and has taken us to the brink of global chaos. Our science shows us that out of chaos, new order arises. Where will the new order come from? It cannot be legislated, nor can it be established through more wars and more power over. I believe this new order can arise only out of individual consciousness. For this reason, the recognition of verbal abuse as a means of controlling, dominating, and having power over another person is of real concern to us all. Since the microcosm of personal relationship influences the macrocosm of civilization, just as the civilization, its customs and culture, influences personal relationship, it is in our relationships that we might affect this change. If so, an opportunity is present today in our everyday lives. It is the opportunity we have to value ourselves and to awaken to the way we express and protect that value in our relationships. If we are to recognize and free ourselves from the influence of the power over model, we must hear ourselves, what words we speak, and in what manner we speak them. Likewise, we must hear the words spoken to us and the manner in which they are spoken. This awareness can bring us to the realization of how we do or do not dignify, respect, protect, and esteem ourselves and ultimately all life. We can begin by having faith in our own value and by trusting our own perceptions. This may be very difficult for the partner of a verbal abuser, because verbal abuse creates victims just as any other subversive system does. Verbal abuse, by its very nature, undermines and discounts its victims' perceptions. Few of the women I interviewed were aware of what was happening in their relationship. Certainly, they did not see themselves as victims. They just knew something was wrong. If one of them had left her relationship, very often her reasons for leaving involved other issues. In a verbally abusive relationship, the partner learns to tolerate abuse without realizing it, and to lose self-esteem without realizing it. She is blamed by the abuser and becomes the scapegoat. The partner is then the victim. Interestingly, in Christian thought, Christ was the last victim and the last scapegoat. He died for all humanity. This message seems to have been obscured by the prevailing worldview of power over and might makes right, which also, of course, makes victims and scapegoats. As we will see, the victims of verbal abuse must wrest a sense of their own value and their self-esteem from the most disempowering and confusing of circumstances. They can do so by recognizing verbal abuse for what it is. What is the origin of the power over model? It is the result of and the perpetrator of poisonous pedagogy, discussed in Alice Miller's book, For Your Own Good, and in John Bradshaw's works. A poisonous pedagogy is a toxic method of teaching or raising a child. It is a method which controls the behavior of the child by the misuse of power over the child. This misuse of power causes the child extreme pain. If the child becomes an adult without having worked through the hurt and pain of the experience, he will perpetuate the misuse of power in adulthood. Consequently, the adult can become toxic or poisonous to others. This toxicity is what we find in abusive relationships. We have looked at the power over model and at the fact that individuals, as well as nations, are motivated to control and dominate others. We may note that their illusion of power is maintained only as long as they have an other to have power over. Tragically, many are desperate to maintain this stance because it is the only power they know. If there is no other, one is created. Personal power is another way of experiencing power, one which doesn't need winners and losers, dominant people and subordinates, and which doesn't require power over an other. Personal power works by mutuality and co-creation, and may be considered a new way of being in and perceiving the world. Let us explore these ideas in the context of a relationship, for here is where we often find two people living and perceiving through the two different models. One is living by power over, the other in personal power. Through these lenses, these two people may see neither each other nor each other's reality. As I researched verbally abusive relationships, the most significant and surprising discovery I made was that the verbal abuser and the partner seemed to be living in two different realities. The abuser's orientation was toward control and dominance. The partner's orientation was toward mutuality and co-creation. In many respects, they were in two different realities. In order to understand them better, let us assume that they do live in separate realities, and for simplicity, let us call these realities Reality 1 and Reality 2. Reality 1 and Reality 2 correspond to the power over and personal power models. In other words, those who feel power through dominance and control, power over, are living in Reality 1. Those who feel power through mutuality and creativity, personal power, are living in Reality 2. It seems that we live in a world that cannot yet accept Reality 2, while the dangers of remaining in Reality 1 become more evident. Unable to begin thinking according to the new model, we live under the threat of annihilation, seemingly caught between conflicting realities. We can move out of this conflict and struggle by understanding what happens when people from these two realities form a relationship. And if we are in Reality 2, becoming adept at recognizing people who are in Reality 1. For example, all is fair in love and war is a Reality 1 perception. Below is an example of what may happen in a relationship when each person is in a different reality. If the partner of the abuser grew up under the influence of reality one and then emerged in reality two, she may find it extremely difficult to distinguish between the two realities. She may be living in reality two and seeking mutuality without having achieved reality two self-esteem, rather like a fish out of water, not yet an amphibian. A significant fact I discovered was that many women living in reality two accepted and responded to communications from reality one as if the communications were valid. The following example shows how that can happen. It may be worthwhile to listen to this example a couple of times because it illustrates a core problem in abusive relationships. Anne is in reality two, R2. And she believes that Z is in R2 with her. We know that he isn't. As you follow their conversation, you will see how Anne slips for a moment into a place between R2, where she lives, and reality 1, R1, where Z lives. Also, you will see how Anne assumes all along that Z is in her reality. Z walks into the room, flops onto a chair near Anne, and says casually, "Boy, are you uncooperative." He is in R1, power over, and now feels one up. Anne, looking slightly perplexed, says, "Why do you say that?" She responds as if Z's statement were valid. She thinks Z is in her reality of mutuality and has some reason to say, "You are an uncooperative person." Z is now ready to begin the battle for dominance and power over. To him, Anne seems open to hearing why she's an uncooperative person. He answers her question with a touch of anger and a barely discernible note of triumph. "Because you didn't help me pick the fruit." Anne then feels she must defend herself. She says, "But I didn't know you were picking it." Z snaps back, "Well, I was." In his mind, he has won. He has just acted out the power over model. He has attacked Anne's basic perception of herself, and she has given credence to what he said by asking why. Z is unaware of Anne's reality. Z is feeling pretty good. At this point, Anne feels hurt and frustrated. She cannot seem to get Z to understand that she is cooperative. She feels some disempowerment and some confusion about what he expected and why he didn't tell her that he wanted some help picking the fruit. She doesn't realize that this whole interaction wasn't about picking the fruit. She doesn't perceive Z's reality at all because he often tells her how much he loves her. And to her, love means mutual empowerment, not power over. If Anne had said, "I felt hurt when you said I was uncooperative," Z, as a confirmed verbal abuser, would have discounted her feeling by saying, for example, "You're making a big thing out of nothing." Or, sarcastically, "Well, if that's the way you want to take it, then sorry." Anne would be left feeling hurt and confused. If Z were in reality too, Anne's reality, he would have said, "Oh, I'm really sorry. I guess I just wished you'd have known I was picking the fruit so I wouldn't have to ask you for help." Then we could say Z really was being crabby, all right, but he regrets his irritability. If Anne had grown up in a reality too environment, she would have recognized that there could never be some reason for Z to say you're not cooperative. She would therefore have recognized that Z was not in her reality. She would have said something like, "Cut it out," immediately. Knowing herself to be cooperative, she wouldn't accept any disparagement, and she wouldn't be left with the frustration of wondering why she can't get him to understand. She would know he doesn't care to understand. He is more interested in, "I win, you lose," because after all, in reality one, That is how one feels power. This kind of power is not personal power. It is power over. And power over is stolen power. In reality one, if you don't have someone to have power over, you don't have any power at all. Another way to look at Z's need to have power over is in the light of what is commonly called the fear of being smothered. This fear is, in fact, the fear of being overpowered. In reality one, Z is either overpowering or believing he is being overpowered, because in this reality, there is no mutuality. Some women might live with and accept Z's verbal jabs, and even his obliviousness to their effects. None, however, can truly live with his hostility, for power over is hostile. He won't change unless he wants to. If his partner confronts his verbal battering, if she recognizes it for what it is, if she asks for change and he refuses, if his attitude is, as one abuser put it, "I can say anything I want," the partner may realize that he can say anything he wants. However, she may also realize that there is nothing heroic about staying around to hear it. Chapter 3. Personal Power. A Look at Reality 2. Love is the child of freedom, never that of domination. Eric Fromm. This chapter explores reality two, how life is perceived, and how loving relationships exist in it. For contrast, in the next chapter, we will look at reality one, where the abuser's struggle for power over, dominance, and control prevents relationships. Personal power works by mutuality and co-creation. Personal power comes from one's connection to his or her own feelings and increases through cooperation with and participation in life. Cooperation and participation with another person who is also grounded in his or her own feelings generate or bring into being a shared reality. This creation is the relationship itself. This is a reality to relationship, because both parties know their personal power. They are mutually supportive and empathetic. Both are living in reality two. A reality two relationship is certainly desirable. If you are experiencing difficulties in your own relationship, you may be wondering, how can I make my relationship into a mutually supportive reality two relationship? It is important to know that one can't make this kind of relationship with another. The reality two relationship is a shared reality. One person alone cannot create it. It takes two. Conversely, because it is a shared reality, one person alone can prevent it. It takes only one. Cooperation with and participation in life include the involvement of oneself in the creative power of life. This involvement generates or brings into being a personal reality which can be described as the relationship one has with oneself. Through our relationship to our creative self, we experience our personal power. We cannot access our personal power when we are unaware of our feelings. Personal power is the ability to know, to choose, and to create from the ground of one's being, from where one's feelings originate. Our feelings help us to know what we want and don't want, and what gives us our greatest satisfaction. When we have this relationship with ourselves and with the world around us, we not only experience our own creativity and personal power, but we also perceive the world to be a mutually supportive and creative place. Thus, we describe reality in a different way than do those who would describe it as a structure of hierarchical power over, each level dominating the one below, with human beings at the top. Through our